Welcome to the Link Endurance Podcast, where we take a deep dive into the mindset, training, and nutrition of some of the world's top endurance athletes. You'll also get cutting-edge training, nutrition, and recovery techniques that I've learned in over 20 years in the fitness and nutrition industry. So whether your goal is a podium at your next race, complete your first race, or simply improve your health, my co-host Miles Keller and I are going to provide you with the knowledge that you need to ensure that every link in your chain is just as strong as the next. Welcome to Link Endurance. Hey, Coach Mo here. Before we get started with today's episode, I have to give you a little bit of a disclaimer. This is a really fun and exciting show today. With that said, there are also a lot of all caps, bold expletives in this episode. Our guest, Kevin Gelotti, is an awesome guy. He is an incredible racer with tons of experience. So I know you're going to enjoy the episode, but if you are used to listening to this with kids in the room or at the office or anywhere else where other people might be able to hear it, you might want to save this one for when you're on a run or a workout and need to get some motivation. Kevin is exciting. It's going to be fun, but again, be warned, there are a lot of big words. All right, here we go. Let's go have some fun with Kevin. All right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Link Endurance Podcast broadcast. Coach Mo here with you. And as always, I got my buddy Miles, the Motivator Keller, and our new extra sidekick, the Vic. Vic is now the Creeper, because what you guys don't know is that when we get on the Skype calls, I can see, like, before we, when we record, we go to audio only. But before then, you can see, like, Victor's right shoulder and a part of his head just lurking in the background. So, but it's always great to have.
That's his best side.
That's his good side. That's his camera ready side.
Moneymaker.
But, Miles, what's up, buddy? How you guys doing today? Y'all cool?
Dude, doing awesome. It's race week, Mo. Psyched.
That's right.
AT&T Stadium Series, first the year that they're having the championship series of the stadium. So, you know me, I can't leave the Metroplex, so I'm excited to be able to get a chance to race again, number one. And number two, the stadium series has always been something very different for us. It's a very unique race that we get to do every year here. Most of our stuff is on trails, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
We're psyched, man. I tell you what I am scared of is that assault bike. I tried out the assault bike a couple times now to see what it feels like, and it kind of creeps up on you, right? 15 calories. You can burn yourself out without knowing you're doing it.
Man, you got that. It's all in your mind, brother. Yeah.
Yeah. I tried to see how long it would take me to do it easy.
Yeah.
And I did it. It took me 50 seconds, and I drained myself way more than I thought when I hopped off.
I got a little,
it's easy for it to catch up to you. You know what I mean?
Well, I may have a little trick for the assault bike that I'll share with you later. I don't want to divulge my sneaky sneakerness to everybody. Otherwise, some of our competition might hear us. So,
So you get the assault bike too, right? When you get to it, you just run right past it.
Yeah, of course. I just go. I'm literally just gonna tap it and go.
Yeah, that was my secret weapon too, and now you just ruined it for everyone. I ruined it, so sorry.
No, I'm excited, dude. Any race week is a great week.
Yes.
How you doing, brother?
Man, I'm good.
You're always doing some crazy rucking or helping some amazing adaptive athletes.
Yeah, we're good, man. We had a good session doing some adaptive rock climbing this morning at Summit Climbing Gym here in Dallas. So that was really cool. I actually just got home from that about 20 minutes before hopping on the call with you guys. But it's just good. I'm really excited about this race coming up, the AT&T Stadium Sprint, because this time last year I was just getting to where I could really run without feeling pain in my calf for the first time in about a year and a half. So I had a good solid track workout this morning with some 800s and some little tempo mile run. So I'm feeling good, man. I'm ready.
I see you working on the stairs at SMU too.
Oh yeah.
Repeats. That's what me and Vic were doing out on the trails too.
Oh yeah, for sure. So, but I'm ready, man. I am excited and can't wait to see what's going to go down this weekend for sure. So
this will be the one race I wear a shirt at too. I'll wear the Lincoln Durant shirt, Mo.
Attaboy.
You know me, I hate shirts, but I do it at the stadium.
All right. So listen, won't you bring in our guest today and let's get this thing cracking.
Okay. So today we're really excited to have a wild man, the California wild man himself, is good friend. Victor knows him even better than I do personally. He's an incredible Masters athlete. You can see him on all the Masters podiums. And Kevin Gelati, welcome to the show, yeah. My friend.
You got my name right. Most people blow it.
Well, I am Italian.
Oh, okay.
I'm half German, half Italian.
What?
So, really?
You make no sense. You're half German, half Italian, and you speak Spanish.
Yeah.
I know. Right? I know. What I've told, and then I grew up around black folks like a majority of my life. So I've had everyone always tell me, especially when I lived in Orlando, they said, I'm a black man trapped in a white man's body who wants to be Spanish.
Everybody's a mutt at this point.
Pretty much.
It's just one big mix. Hey, let me tell you something really quick about that Dallas race. You guys better be cool to me and don't talk any shit on this podcast because I'm going to be announcing for that race. I'm flying out there on behalf of Spartan Race as the announcer for the Facebook Live. And I'll talk smack on all of you guys while you're racing. So be cool.
Oh man, that's cool. Is this the first time you're emceeing?
Yeah, you know, I've never done anything like this before, but I can just riff shit pretty well, and I know the sport as good as well as anybody. So they asked me, and I was actually going to go to Mexico and race that national championship because I just got back from Italy racing their national championship. But I just couldn't pass up the opportunity and the experience of just seeing what that's all about.
Okay, cool. We're gonna get into Italy a little later. I can't wait. But let me go ahead and dive in. You and me, between the two of our ADDs, you and me can derail this real quick. So I'm gonna jump into the questions. Sure. So, hey man, one of the things that I find is so incredible about you: 48 years old, still competing at a high level, riding the podium dragon. You know, when did sports start for you? When did that competitive passion ignite within you?
So I've been active my entire life. My brother, myself, as we were kids, playing soccer, baseball, a little bit of football, which I don't really care for, but mainly soccer. But how this aspect of my life evolved, this is no joke, it was based on a bet. In college at the University of Iowa, a friend of mine who was a total stoner, but the guy could run like a machine, bet me I couldn't do a duathlon. And not only did I take him up on the bet and do it, I almost won on a mountain bike with slit tires and a camelback, having no idea what the hell I was doing.
Holy crap.
And that is honestly how I am here 28 years later into my racing career, because I knew at that moment after that day, like, I just knew it was an epiphany. This is what I wanted to do with my life.
Wow. Wow. What was the thought that came when you came across the finish line? You almost won. I can do better at this? What was going through your head? What
exactly? Yeah, it's kind of like I didn't really know what I was doing. I was making it up as I went along, which is pretty much how I lived my whole life. I just self-taught and kind of go on the fly. So, I mean, I felt miserable after the race, but when I saw the results, I realized exactly what you just said. I was like, you know what? If I actually apply myself here, I bet you I can be pretty damn good at this. I mean, then I did another, then another, then another, and then it just turned into all kinds of stuff, from running races and, I mean, you name it, I've probably done it at some point.
Yeah, you got in. So when did you go into triathlon from duathlon?
Well, I've only done a couple triathlons, and that was really early on at the University of Iowa. And that's when I really found out that I was legitimately a legit runner. You know, I've got 445, 450 miles on record, you know, 115 half marathon. So it's like I realized I would – and at that time – duathlon with Kenny Souza, I don't know if you guys knew who that is, but he was one of the kings of the sport, was extremely popular, especially in Europe. And so I just transitioned over into what I was better at, and that was running and cycling.
Nice. Mo, did you ever do biathlon? Because I know you also have the triathlon background.
Duathlons? Yeah, I've done.
Biathlons and duathlons are not the same thing, yes. Just to be clear.
Totally different.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so I'm an idiot. I've never done either. Well, I thought both were just running and biking. What's the difference?
Duathlon is run, bike, run, and it can be anywhere from a sprint distance all the way up to, I've done Powerman distance races, which can be 6, 7, 8, 9 hours. So you might have like a half marathon start, 70, 80 miles on the bike, and then another half marathon, something like that. But a biathlon is traditionally shooting and skiing, yep. Cross-country skiing.
Yeah.
Okay. I got you.
So yes, well, I've done some duathlons.
Yeah.
And that's really
you need to try a biathlon.
That's where. Oh, I've done those as well, but you just can't find biathlons in California, right? There's no snow.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And
they want. I mean, you'd have to go way up north, but most places just, you know, it's very hard to find a place where you can shoot a weapon and ski here in California. And other places like Colorado, where Robert Killian's at, they have a biathlon series. So, I mean, if I had access, I would do them all the time.
You know what's wild? During the the Winter Olympics that just passed, like, well, there was no showing from America, and I messaged Killian, and I said, hey, man, what in the world's up with America? Why aren't we up there on the competing with all the other rest of the world? He's like, they're just on another level and all those other countries. Those Nordic countries and things like that, where it's always cold and they got winter all the time. They're just on another level, man. I can't wait for the day, though, when you see America, like, be a presence there, you know?
I've raced a lot in Europe. I've spent a lot of time in Europe. And I can agree with Robert that when it comes to a lot of sports, you guys.
Oh, dude.
Especially endurance-related multi-sports. When you go to race in Europe, it is a whole different freaking level. Like, you can be the man in the United States. You know, I have multiple 8 all-time All-Americans, national titles, blah, blah, blah. I'd go to Europe, and I'd get my ass whipped.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, dude, it's ridiculous. I did a 70.3, a half Ironman in Mallorca, Spain. And,
yeah,
man,
I know.
Watching the Swiss and, I mean, God, dog, man, watching those guys climb the mountain was like effortless. And they descend like they're on fire.
You get the Swiss. You'll also get UK guys like the Brits. They're awesome. Yep. The German guys, and this goes guys and girls. I don't give a shit what you are. But guys, girls, whatever. The Germans, strong as hell. I mean, it's just the Italians. I mean, the last duathlon, one of the last duathlon world championships I did, one of the top guys was an Italian guy who I got to be friends with. And it's just. And what I could never figure out, even to this day, is I train as hard as anybody. I train as often as anybody. If those are the two metrics you want to use, I can afford any equipment I want. I can afford anything I want to do. Fortunately in life, I'm blessed for that. And I still can never reach the level they did in Europe. I mean, I could beat 90% of the guys, but the top 10% at world championships would just literally make me look like I was in an open wave in a Spartan race.
Well, yeah. You know, that's another thing I was going to ask you, by the way. I think Vic mentioned you're a programmer. What do you do for a living, man?
You know, I don't talk about it much because I don't think it's that exciting. Plus, it's just not the thing that I'm trying to promote in my life. So, for everybody, because I get this question all the time. People email me and ask me. People, I mean, it's crazy that, really? But yes, I write code. So I sit there and I write HTML, PHP, CSS. I do graphic work. And I have done this since graduate school in roughly 2000 is when I started. And I own my own consulting business. I have since that point. So just before you guys talked, I'm sitting there customizing a WordPress theme for a client, or I'm working on the SGX website for Spartan Race. I mean, that's a whole story in itself. Like, are you guys aware of my relationship with Spartan Race and their websites?
No.
I understand. You programmed for them, right? You made the website?
Yeah. So in 2011, when I met Joe DeSena, he literally hired me on the spot at the Temecula Spartan race because we just clicked. And I started talking to him about how poor the presence was for Spartan Race on the web, about organic and search engine optimization and all these kind of things. And say that again.
No, I said SEO. It's huge now.
Yeah. SEO. And we just clicked, man. I mean, Joe and I, we understand each other, which is why to this day we're friends and we communicate. And so he literally, because this is how the guy works, he literally contacted me 2 days later and said, okay, I'm going to turn over all of the Spartan Web related assets to you and I want you to do your thing. I mean, that's literally how
Holy
it works.
Crap. No and, contract no joke. In place. It was just like, here it is.
Here it is, man. And I said, well, here's my hourly. And he's like, here's my hourly. And he's like, okay, let's do this. I said, all right, let's do this. And so from 2011 to about 2015, maybe 14, late 14, if you ever signed up for a Spartan race and you went to their website, I was single-handedly responsible for all of that. I built the pages. Now, I didn't do the registration, but I built all the pages tied to our registration platform at the time, all of that. And then once we became a huge corporation, then we have a whole team that works on it now, and I work on just a smaller aspect. But in the beginning, it was literally me and Joe and a couple other guys. It was chaos, you guys. It was total grassroots chaos.
Well, now I know you're responsible for the website. I got a lot of yelling at you to do because I've had a few problems with the website trying to get about races popping up. But I'll call you and message you later, sir.
No. I'm not technical support.
Everyone send their complaints to Kevin Gelati.
No.
Let the hate mail begin.
Yeah, I can tell you all the nuances of how everything works. I won't bore you with it, but I will just tell you people have to understand. We are servicing hundreds of thousands of people in 40-something countries on multiple platforms. And we are constantly setting the trends and the gold standard in the industry for trying to keep up the web presence and the social media presence. You guys, it's a lot of moving pieces. So are things not going to be 100% perfect at times? Yeah. That's life. That's reality. I mean, nobody has it dialed 100%, but I think we have it dialed as anybody can.
How in the world do the websites work when – I'm not trying to bore anyone, but I know everyone wants to know the answer to this. You will get ads while you're searching, while you're on Facebook, you're on something else for like races you look for. How in the world do they know that that tailors to you? Is it cookies on your computer?
Yes. It's very easy. It's cookies. Right. So if I went and searched for a shoe that I wanted with over the next 24 hours, 36 hours, 48 hours, you're going to constantly see ads that are somehow related to that shoe. And it's just simple algorithms and cookies that pick up on that you opted into, especially by being related to Facebook or Google. And that's how they serve you those ads. It's not complicated. That's the very simple answer.
Gotcha.
It is.
It's wild because you'd be having a conversation with someone. Like sometimes I could swear I haven't actually searched for anything, but I've been like on the phone or on a Skype call or something, said something, and then received an ad for it on the computer hours later. And all of a sudden I'm looking over my shoulder
this isn't related to phone calls, but technically with email, Google and a lot of companies, especially Gmail, if you opted to use Gmail, you signed off on the ability for them to scan your emails. Again, I'm simplifying this. Okay. Let's not get nerdy, but they can scan and see keywords and then they will tailor their ads relative to the fact that you're like, hey, Vic, what's that shoe you used to like to wear? Oh, Kevin, it's the so-and-so. And the next thing you know, they've picked up on that. You'll start to see those ads.
Thanks, Kevin, for checking my email.
I wasn't he said stalking.
I don't,
that's awesome. That's really interesting stuff, Kevin. A lot of us don't know that stuff. I know that probably seems boring to you, man, but it's something we all come across, not just in OCR and athletes, but in sports, but in life in general. You wonder how in the world they know that. But anyway,
I derailed the train. I'm sorry. I did it again. Back to the questions. When did you decide OCR is your new passion? You're done with the other races. OCR is it. When did that happen?
Great question, man. Seriously. I don't get asked this often enough, and I'm so glad you did. So I have a 25-year nonstop history with USA Triathlon, 8-time All-American again, national championship titles, blah, blah, blah. Well, in 2014, I raced my last world championship in Spain. So that would have made me about 45, 44, something like that. And I was the fifth fastest American on a 100-person team. Which is pretty damn good for that age. Oh, and yeah. The thing is, I had been kind of looking for a way out of triathlon for a couple of years at that point. It had run its course in my mind. Like, I had done everything and far more than anybody, including myself, I will admit, ever expected I would be capable of doing. I blew everybody's expectations out of the water. But it had run its course, and I have always done mud runs. Camp Pendleton mud run, I've won. That's 10,000 people. Me and a good buddy have done that 10 years in a row, let's say. So I had a cursory understanding of what OCR was, although mud runs were the predecessors. In 2011 is when I really got introduced to OCR, which was Spartan Race, which is, again, very beginning. And I loved it. And I would do them every time they were in town. But duathlon was still my focus. And ultimately what happened is I knew I was done in 2014. I knew that was a great way to not end my career in duathlon, because I could go do one at any point. I try to stay fit for them, but I just didn't want to do them. And OCR, you guys, in 2014-ish was on fucking fire. And I just knew I wasn't going to give up being competitive. I'm too driven. And so it was a very easy decision over. It wasn't an easy transition, but it was a very easy decision to transfer over at that point, because I wasn't done being a competitor and wanting to race and wanting to push myself.
Wow. It, just to kind of go along those lines too, after competing for so long, I know in order to reach that pinnacle, you need to sacrifice a lot. What have you sacrificed to be so fast even into your later 40s?
I've sacrificed relationships with my family. I've sacrificed every relationship I've had with a woman in the end seems to go south, because I have always, and I make no bones about the fact that I will always put my athletic career first. And everybody understands that in the beginning, but it doesn't seem to stick through time that I was serious about being upfront and clear about that. So I've missed out on my nieces and nephews growing up. I've missed out on hanging out with my family in Colorado and Iowa, where they live. You know, I haven't been as social as I would have liked to have been over the years, because while everybody else was out having a good time, I was taking ice baths on a Friday night, elevating my legs and worrying about what the race was going to be like. And, you know, so it's just, I've lost jobs. I've lost friends. I've almost died because of the sport. And that is not an exaggeration.
Really? Tell us about that.
So in 2001, I came back from Italy and I was home for 24 hours, maybe 18, something like that. I was out for a cool down, just a spin ride, and in Del Mar, California. And a truck came across three lanes and smacked into me at 60 miles an hour, roughly, threw me about 70 feet into an embankment. I broke my back in two places, my left arm, my left leg. My bike was cracked into three pieces. I spent 3 weeks in a hospital, two in the ICU, getting 24-hour round-the-clock care, blood transfusions to survive. I spent a year in rehab. That was the longest hiatus I had from racing, but I got back to it as soon as possible. So that was all because of love of the sport, out training, out preparing for the next race, and boom.
Yeah. I think that's a great.
I'm speechless.
Yeah, I'm glad. Number one, glad you're alive. Holy shit. Right. But I think that's a great, like we talk about, overcoming injury, overcoming obstacles, how to take a break when you get hurt. And I think that's a great example of, man, when you literally get the shit knocked out of you, take your time, heal. But when you're healing the whole time, like we just met via Skype about 29 minutes ago. But I can tell that, man, when you were in the hospital and rehabbing, you were probably forward focused on nothing but getting back and doing everything possible, right?
Yeah, I was a nightmare to the rehab people and to my doctors because A of all, I didn't take any of their bullshit. Like I realized that the medical industry has a major flaw, and that flaw is they're more about covering their ass than they are about helping you get back to where you were. I mean, I was pretty much told you'll never run again. You'll never ride again. It's very unlikely you're going to run again, and you're certainly never going to race again. And essentially you should just give up. And I'm like, you know what, man, you're fucking with the wrong guy. Like yep. when you're telling people that shit, you're telling it to people that are within the bell-shaped curve near the median. And I've always looked at myself as the guy that's on like what are called outliers of the bell-shaped curve, way out on the edges. Not because I think I'm better than anybody, but just because my mentality is like, oh, you're going to try to tell me I can't do it? That you just should never have done that. Well, but I'm glad they did in a way, you know. But in physical therapy, I'd be the guy that'd say, hey, you want to do 20 reps? Can we do 30? Whereas I'd look around physical therapy office, you guys, and they'd say, hey, we need you to do 20. And everybody else would be like, can I do 10? Oh, man, I only want to do 5. It's like I would double down on the therapy. You know what, you guys? I started my consulting business because I left my job after that accident and dedicated myself to physical therapy 5 days a week because I had so many injuries and you can't rehab each injury at every rehab session. So I'd go once my arm, once my back, once my leg, once for my hands, etc. And I left my job and started my own business so that I could continue to live the life I wanted to live because no employer was going to give me the time I needed to do what I wanted to do. That's a prime example of putting my athletic career before anything else.
Yeah.
Anything else.
All right, man.
You probably had some real deep conversations when you're sitting there during the rehab to come to that point. What kind of conversation do you have yourself when you realize that, no, this is what I want to do?
Yeah. You know, I had invested so much in leaving Iowa, leaving my family, moving everything I had out to Southern California, which is where the pinnacle of multi-sports racing is and was. I didn't know anybody. I've never been here. I literally put my shit in a U-Haul trailer, put it behind my shitty little Acura Integra, and drove out here over 3 days, found a crap hole apartment in a studio in Lacadia, California, behind a 7-Eleven. For anybody listening, the Fog Cutter Apartments, if anybody knows that. And it was disgusting, but I didn't care because I came here with a singular focus to make this life happen. That was it. And no matter what I had to do, no matter what shit job, no matter what, I was going to make it happen.
That's awesome.
But the crazy thing is, you guys, I didn't really like part of what I'm telling you. I realize in retrospect, but didn't realize I was doing at the time. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like I didn't realize I was so hardcore relative to what I found out knowing other people now. Like to me, it just seems so normal that I didn't look at what I was doing as very odd.
Right. That's just how you operate.
Because it's a mentality.
Yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, when I say to people, you know, it's mentality or it's a lifestyle, like that's just not a stupid fucking joke I'm making to make up a funny hashtag. Like it's literally how I live my life. Every single day I wake up and every night I go to bed and everything in between, I'm constantly thinking about what it is I'm going to do next relative to my athletic career, what my goals are, how I'm going to train, what the next race is, how can I improve? Like it's a nonstop endless conversation that goes on in my brain that never shuts off, and it's never going to. And I don't want it to. Like, this is what I want to be, and I'm happy with being what I am.
Yeah. Well, I think that's important too, man. You know what you want to do, you know who you want to be, and you don't let anyone dictate that or have any influence. And I kind of, it's like you are the antithesis of do what you want to do, live your dream, find your passion, go for it.
And I've trained with Kevin a couple of times, and no crap, he has. I think he has a 3-year journal. Is it 3 years or 4-year journal of your workouts, Kevin?
Yeah, actually, as of this year, it's 5 years of every workout I've ever done at the CrossFit gym I was a member of on a piece of paper that's and it's in a special sealed box that's like an inch and a half tall. And they go all the way back 5 years with sweat and blood and chalk and
that's awesome.
Scribbles.
That's fun. So, hey, Kevin, let's talk about – I want to get back into Spartan for a second. You just got back from Italy, and we were talking earlier about how amazing those folks are over there on the other side of the pond. How was your experience, and how's the OCR scene different over there?
Well, I'm Italian-American. I've been to Italy maybe 12 times, let's just say, for the sake of argument. It's the – as you guys were joking about earlier, German, Italian – Greek, whatever, we're all kind of mutts. So I have more in my background, but it's the piece of my history that I've always related to the most because of my father and my grandfather, Italian grandfather, Italian American father. So I love being in Europe. I love racing in Europe. I love the smell of Europe, the cobblestones of Europe, the narrow streets of Europe, the history of Europe, everything about it, and Italy in particular. And I have made some very good friends over the years, like you guys. Vic, you and I have trained together, dude. We did Broken Skull Challenge together. Like, the people like you that I've met, it's been awesome. Well,
shout out real quick to Serena and Luca, Lorenzoni, and Ilaria in Italy, by the way. That's who you're hanging out with, right?
Yeah, that's what I was about to talk about. So they've become some of my closest friends. Like, when I met Luca and his wife, we just clicked. Robert Killen introduced us at Tahoe a few years ago at one of his seminars, and we've been friends ever since and hanging out ever since. And they are like – they have become an extended family of mine, and I love those guys. Well, they invited me over, and I had spent so much time racing and traveling internationally and not spending time traveling my own country that part of the beauty of Spartan Race for me was I could travel to all of these different states and get to know the state and see the state and race. Because, see, I don't take vacations. My vacations are racing vacations. I just don't go fucking sit on a beach. Like, I go do stuff. And so, but what happened after the last couple of years of that is, like, you know what? I started missing international travel, and I start to get really grumpy, and I start to jones for traveling internationally. And so I was like, you know what? In 2018, I'm going to start making some international trips again to race. Italy was a no-brainer for me. So that's kind of the long-winded explanation of how that happened. So I don't know if you want to hear a little bit about that race and about the people and.
Yeah, man, go ahead. Tell us about it.
Yeah. So it was definitely better than I expected in terms of I've heard a lot about international races. They don't live up to the Spartan Race expectation because they don't have the resources we do. They're licensees. People need to understand something. Every international race is a licensee of Spartan Race. When you race a Spartan Race in the United States, you are racing Spartan Race. It is Spartan Race people. It is Spartan Race corporate. It is 100% Spartan Race. When you're racing in Italy, for example, it's a licensee who buys a license. Okay. So that means sometimes the rumors are the obstacles aren't that great. They make shit from Home Depot. It's kind of Spartan, but it's not. I had been hearing these rumors for years, and it made me nervous because I'm like, I don't want to go all the way there and have a shit show, right? You know, like, I can make better obstacles in my garage than with some of the shit I've seen on some of these international races. So I was extremely and pleasantly surprised when I got over there to see the venue was definitely a Spartan venue. All the signage, everything that you would expect at a Spartan race venue was there. The atmosphere there was there, the stage, the music, the signage, the logos, the sponsors, like it was legit. And I breathed a big sigh of relief when I saw that because I just didn't want garbage. People are awesome. The venue was awesome. A couple thoughts about the race. I wish they had more obstacles. See, this was a national championship, you guys.
So what was the distance of this one, Kevin?
So roughly, you know, this was their national championship was a sprint. And so you guys know how that goes, somewhere between 3 and 5 miles. Right. Okay. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't ever pay attention to the distance. I don't give a shit. I race whatever it is. We all have the same race. So I don't care what the distance is, but from what I heard, I think it ended up being closer to 5 miles than anything. And to give you an example, this race took me 50 minutes and it was about as flat as you could get. Florida, which I had a phenomenal race in, took me about 35 to 37 minutes, and it was flat as a pancake. So that tells you this was a bit of a longer distance, right? Yeah. Simple extrapolation. So that's the distance. They were missing some key obstacles, which was a real bummer. Like no tire flip, no bucket carry. I mean, how the fuck can you have a Spartan race with no tire flip and no bucket carry? Right? I mean, that's not even – that was so lame. Like, and listen, I'm not trying to be a fanboy, a Spartan fanboy. I call it as I see it. And this is – as much as I love it, that was pretty weak. We had no twister. We had no hoist. A Spartan race with no hoist? Come on, man. Yeah. Like, there are some no-brainer obstacles. If you're at a Spartan race, you have to have. And right. They didn't. And so what that translated to was
– what about the spear throw, Kevin? Did they have a different kind of spear throw? Is it the same spear throw in Dahe?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you say that. The spear throw was very much our spear throw. The distance was definitely closer. Now, we all know if you've done as many Spartan races as we have, I think I've done 70 at this point, the spear throw distances can vary, okay? But their spear throw was closer than I expected. The target was fucking huge. The spear was pretty much the same, except I think it had a blunt tip. But I kind of liked their target better, not because it was bigger, because it was wrapped in plastic and then had like this black tarp overlap over it. So what that means is the integrity of the straw would stay and not disintegrate after 5,000 people have thrown the spear.
That's smart.
So it could hold the spear better, but
you have to throw it harder.
Exactly. You couldn't have a pussy throw because it would bounce off this overlay in front of the straw. So you had to come with a legit throw or you were screwed. But if you came with a legit throw, you were more likely to be successful. So I think their spear target, I like their spear target way better than ours.
Nice.
Yeah, I throw it like a girl, so when it barely hits the hay, it just really hope it sticks. I don't throw it as hard as some people throw it because I throw it with the two-hand method. But yeah, I would.
That is just so preposterous. That is just so preposterous.
That's awesome.
The freaky thing about you is. I look at a guy like you sometimes before I got to know you, then we got to be friends, and I'm like, you know what, man, this guy, like, if I saw you walking down the street, I wouldn't think you were the badass that you actually are in this
sport. Well, but I'm that's not. Like, so you're good. You're spot on that.
thank you for being humble, man. But
you're pretty spot on that. I don't look badass. So,
but dude, you need to man up with the spear throw and cut the shit with throwing it. Like, that's just. come on, dude.
I would say your mom taught me that, but she doesn't watch you race. So
that's funny. All right.
You don't even want to get into those jokes, dude, because no. I will crush you.
So Kevin, number one, I love that you travel for races. That's that 70.3 I did in Mallorca. That's how my wife and I started our honeymoon. We both did that to go race. So I love that.
That's the way to live, dude. Yeah, dude. That's the way to live.
Yep. That's how we picked a lot of our vacations. Like, what can we do? Like, what badass race can we do or something?
Bingo.
Yeah. It's so much fun. I love that.
I've been to 25 countries now.
Yep.
Every one of them I've worked out in, and a majority of them I've raced in. I found, like, for example, in Thailand, a 5K. I've backpacked through every country in Latin America. I would find these cheesy 5Ks in Guatemala or something just to race. But then, of course, I have actual true race vacations like Italy and Portugal and Spain and Germany and Switzerland and blah, 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 blah.
Oh, for sure. So, hey, it seems like you stick mostly to Spartan races, though. Is there a reason for that?
Well, that's true, but it's not true. It's true because they have a shitload more races. They have a point series. They have money to win. They have television exposure. They offer so much more that it makes it easier for me to want to go to their races because their races are legit. Now, I will do any OCR race. I don't care about the brand. And I've done most of them. I think I'm missing a Savage race, which I badly want to do, but that's because they don't come to the West Coast. And I don't want to do one bad enough to travel to. And then there's a few couple other brands. But other than that, I've done almost every brand, some of them multiple times. I've even done brands that don't exist anymore. Atlas Race.
Yeah.
Battle Fraud.
Right. Okay.
No, he's missing Conquer the Gauntlet. You got to try Conquer the Gauntlet.
Yeah, I haven't done Conquer the Gauntlet. I've done a few of their obstacles, you know, because OCRWC, you know, that the way their setup is, they borrow obstacles, which I think is a brilliant freaking idea. But they borrow obstacles from other races and bring them in. And so I've done a few of their obstacles, like the nuclear race, the Nordic man, something, the Nordic man. Right. I've done some of these obstacles, but I haven't done some of the races. But I will absolutely do any of them. None of them scare me. Bring it on. It's just a matter of I need them. I need some of these races to bring more to the table. Like, I'll give an example, Vic. I would never, ever travel to a terrain race. Like, it's never.
What makes you think I travel for a terrain race?
Well,
I have about 30 Trekks up there in my garage, so, you know,
yeah,
I didn't travel that much.
Listen, I'm not shitting on terrain race. That's not my point. My point is there is a higher caliber of obstacle that I expect now and that I want to race on now. And I think terrain race, as just an example, again, not trying to shit on them, they have their place. They cater to their people. It's fantastic. People get out. They get a taste. They get to see what it's like. But for me, it's just not burly enough to want to travel to spend the time and money and effort to buy plane tickets to do that race. You understand?
Hey, Victor, how do you think Kevin would do on Pegatron? You think he can make it across? Well, yeah, I think Kevin could pass.
Yeah, Pegatron would be a piece of cake for Kevin. Yeah. It's just it's a pegboard that's stable.
Please. Come on, man. I got videos of doing a pegboard, hanging it from a rope, going up one side and down the other side. So it's swinging as a pendulum while I'm on the pegboard, going up and coming back down.
There you go.
Come on.
Vertical's easy, man. I want to see horizontal.
Let me just put it this way. I'm not worried.
You got to come. Hey, they got a master's category, too. Conquer the Gauntlet.
Yeah, so let me say something on that topic really quick because I think it's important. I'm 48. I don't shy away from it. It is what it is. As I commonly say to people, it's the race you're never going to outrun, so fuck it. There's no reason to fight it. There's no reason to hide from it. There's no reason to be embarrassed about it. If anything, embrace it. Now, there's something you guys need to know that's really important that I want listeners to hear and whatnot. I don't give a shit about my age. You have never heard me, and I will never talk about it being an explanation for anything good or bad. So you guys have to understand, when I go to races, I only made a topic about the Masters division because Spartan Race did. Other than that, I don't care. I'll race anybody, anytime. Like, the age doesn't matter to me. So when people talk about Masters, I am a Masters athlete, technically speaking, but it doesn't matter to me. And now that we are done with the Masters category, you notice I never talk about it anymore because it's over and I've moved on. Now all I care about is age group. You know, I just adapt to whatever that is. And yeah. Now,
Masters are the guys that are winning most of the races.
Shit, if you look at my buddy Kevin Donahue has put together some stats over time and you know, run the numbers. I don't pay as much of attention to it as he does. But I think, you know, there's a 40-plus group on Facebook for Spartan Race. And, man, 40-plus, we clean everybody's fucking clock time and time and time again. And yep. I don't mean that in an arrogant way. It's just the facts, man. You look at the numbers, and the numbers do not lie.
So, because you guys don't have much time,
on that same line, though,
Kevin. Hurry up and race.
Well, hey, kind of go on that same line. What do you say to people that, like, you know, because I'm in that same mindset as you were. I'm 43, but I don't feel like it. I don't act like it, and I fucking hate it when people say, "Well, I'm getting old now." No, you're not. You think you
yeah,
are.
That fucking conversation makes me so mad sometimes. Like, when people post stuff like that on my social media, I will correct them. Like,
yeah.
You know, good job for showing others what the old men can do. And I'm like, listen, motherfucker, A of all, I'm not old. B of all, like, when I look in the mirror, I truly see a guy that I feel like I saw when I was in college. Like, I just think, when you say the terms like it's a mindset, the mindset that I'm talking about is not indicative of one piece of this giant puzzle. It's indicative of the mindset of racing and training first, the mindset of age doesn't matter to me, the mindset of I want to race, the mindset of nutrition, the mindset of all these things. So like, if you approach your life that way and approach your life where you consider yourself old, you're fucked.
Yep.
Like, I feel bad. I feel bad for you, because when I get up every day, I don't even think about my age, you guys. Like, I really, it doesn't even enter my mind until somebody else reminds me of how old I am. Other than that, I don't live like that. Like, I it's just not what I think.
Yeah. I 100%
yeah, you remind me
you,
every
man.
Time I, you remind me every time I see you, because you're like, I could be your freaking dad. So, yeah, I remember
yeah,
that each time.
It is kind of weird. Like, think about this. There are people out there that like to give me a lot of shit. Like, Hunter just doesn't let up on fucking with me. Like, every time I see Hunter, he's reminding me, old man, blah, blah. I mean, just yesterday was like, hey, Hunter, hey, good job, you know, being geriatric and pulling up a shopping cart full of weight. Keep it up, old man. Like, it's funny. That's Hunter. You know, I get it, but consider this. I've been racing longer than that motherfucker's been alive.
That
give
is
that
awesome.
Some thought.
Let's see him compete at that age when
that's what I told him. I said, you know what, dude, you can make fun of me all you want. I really don't give a shit. Like, it doesn't bother me. It's funny. But two things. One, better hope you make it to 48. Okay. That, first of all, you're fortunate. Second of all, you better hope, and pray you're racing at that age. And when you do, you're gonna think the same thing I think when somebody else says that stupid joke to you. And here's what it is. Man, everybody grows old. You can't escape it. And one day, people like that, and I'm not just picking on him because I hear it from a lot of people, they will be confronted with a younger person giving them shit about their age, and they will look back and say, all I want is just a little bit of respect for the hard work and dedication I put in. You don't have to like me. I don't care. But just come on, man. Give a little bit of respect for the people that were there fucking grinding before you were even born.
Yeah. Hear you on that.
I look up huge to that, man. It's mindset that I go back to that I respect so much. I don't care how many times you won a race or how many of you podium. You can, if you have the mental grit to keep working out and keep that drive through life's troubles and problems, that speaks tremendous amounts about you as a person alone.
Yeah, I would agree. And not because I think that about myself. It's because I look at other people like me that are quote unquote masters athletes or people that I look up to that have been grinding for debt. Look at Heather Golnick. Woman is a fucking – she is the shit. And like people don't understand that are younger, don't understand – what somebody like Heather has accomplished in decades of racing, and she's still out there grinding, and she's still kicking the shit out of people that are a fraction of her age. Do you realize how rare that actually is?
Yeah, like it's huge.
The percentage of people that are still doing what her and I do at our ages is, I mean, I don't even know, but you're talking a few percent, a few percent.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So it's when I see people like her that I understand what people might see when they look at me. Does that make sense?
Yep, yeah. 100%. So talk to us about your workouts. You talked about that you have that catalog of 5 years, but what's your programming theory, and has that changed in the last years or few years or so?
Yeah. So let me tell you something really quick. Vic's talking about that box I have. Vic, that box is just CrossFit. If you look back at my Google Calendar, I have every workout I've ever done, and I invested money in transferring stuff from a Palm Pilot calendar over into Google Calendar, so I have decades of workouts. Every day of my workout is in my Google Calendar. That's how I look at stuff. But anyway, I am a massive fan of the concept of functional fitness or functional training. I have a master's degree in sports psychology, which means I had to go through all the kinesiology, all the anatomy, everything. I have my undergrad is in psychology, so I have 2 degrees in psychology. So I pay attention to everything that I hear, read, see. I digest it all. And I came to the conclusion after 28 years of proven work, that a lot of stuff out there is absolute fucking bullshit. There's so much horseshit out there and trends that people buy into that I believe is just straight up nonsense. So I believe the body is a phenomenal fucking machine. And the brain and the body combined are truly capable of doing things far outside of what I believe people think it should be capable of doing. I'll give you an example. When you see me train in my training and you see all the stuff that I do, you'll notice I don't give a shit about my form. I do not care about my form. And you can talk to me all day long that you want about form, but I just don't buy it. And I've got decades of proof to back up what I'm saying. Because I believe the body adapts, and I believe in real life, when you get out there and it's fucking cold or hot, you're just beat down, you're wet or you're muddy or you're dry, you've done 20-something obstacles, and you're just hammered, form goes out the window. You'll do whatever the hell you have to do to get the obstacle done. That's why I train that way. In kinesiology, the term is specificity. That's the way I live my life. I train like I'm going to race. So I make things hard on myself. I don't worry about form, because in real life, form doesn't mean shit and goes out the window. And all right. That's the philosophy I stand by. So all my training is like that. I train to race. I train how I'm going to race. So if my form looks shitty doing a deadlift, or my form looks shitty lifting a 400-pound tire, I don't fucking care. I literally don't care.
Got it. So
because that's what it
So what does it look like for you as far as like on a weekly basis? Like how much are you running mileage wise versus lifting and functional fitness? Or are you kind of combining all of them?
Well, you will never, ever, ever see me doing any functional fitness or any functional training that I do, like in the CrossFit gym, without doing aerobic based, like cycling, running, rowing, stuff like that. I don't do it. Life is not static. I'm not static. I run in and out of obstacles. Ask Vic. Vic and I had a thoroughly and utterly, same with Faye Stenning, brutal workout, and everything was running in and out, constant movement. That's how you race, man. You don't stand there and do shit statically. So for me, I don't have a ratio, you guys. Like, I don't work that way. I wake up and I have a loose idea of how I want to train, but I literally make it up that day on the fly. That is no joke. Like, I believe in myself enough, and I know what I'm doing enough that I can make shit up on the fly, and I know it's right. So an average week for me at this point in my season, where we're in summer, I minimally work out twice a day, often three times a day. I do not show everybody what I do. I will never show everybody everything that I do, because some things are just for me. And they are not for the people, and they are not for everybody else.
Right.
So I might show people one thing that I do, one workout that I do, but you do not see everything that I do. So 2 to 3 today is common. I would say at this point, if I were to think of hours, I probably train somewhere between 15 and 18 hours in a week, which is quite a lot, actually. People may not think so, but
yeah, but you're also coming from 25 years of triathlon and multi-sport training, where I'm sure you were going, you know, plus 20 to 25 hours a week easily,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah. So when I start looking at my past and how we used to train, you guys, 6 to 8 hour bike rides was so normal for me. Like my girlfriends, my ex-wife, like people, they would drive out and meet me 50 miles out with extra food or whatever, so I could continue to ride 5, 6, 7, 8 hours. I'd go running 2, 3, 4 hours. Like, so those hours that I'm quoting you now, that's actually kind of in a way a cutback for me. But here's why, because I think this is germane to the question you asked me. I don't build base anymore. I don't believe in the concept at my age and my background in building base. And the reason why I don't believe in building base is because I have 30 freaking years of building base, you guys. Like, I don't need to build any more base, you know? So yeah. Everything that I do is about a term that was new to me in CrossFit, but now I've accepted the term because it makes total sense. HIIT, high intensity interval training. Now, I have done training like that for decades, but never had heard the term, right? So when you guys see me doing those brick workouts in my garage, I've been doing that shit for so long, like I didn't know it was called HIIT.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No? Well, and
so
that's,
for
that's
me,
like, I think a lot of people that when you're doing, you know, when you're talking about building a base and base training and you're doing multiple hours a week, and we've talked about this on the show before, when you're talking to guys like Ryan Atkins and folks like that, I mean, what people need to realize is that these guys and like you've been doing this for so long that doing a 50 mile week of running or 16 hours in a week, that's, your body has adapted that so well over so many years that it's not stressful. But where people run into trouble is we have these new folks that come into OCR and like, well, you know, I look at Kevin Gelati, he's 48 years old, he's crushing 16 hour weeks, I need to be doing 20. No, you got to build up to that. You got to be smart.
Yeah. Not only do you need to build up to that, but at this, so you're right about everything you said. You know, my body is adapted, and you know, I'm not saying that there's necessarily anything special about me. I think there's a lot of it related to genetics and, of course, you know, the mindset that I talk about. But I, you know, it wasn't always like this, you guys. Like, I had to build up like everybody else. But what I was doing was I was building up in the 90s, you know. And so,
yeah.
So for me now, what I have found, I'll tell you guys a little something right now that I haven't told a lot of people, that, but it's kind of interesting. My last world championship in 2014 in Spain, where I was the fifth fastest American in the long course, in the Olympic distance course. You guys, for the preceding months leading to that race, I was doing workouts that would last no more than 20 to 25 minutes, if you can believe that. And I was on fucking fire.
Oh, yeah. You were
letting. And you guys, I stumbled across that type of training because of an injury that stopped me from putting in the massive miles. But I knew I had to keep fitness. I had no idea what HIIT was. I just wung it because I've gone on my gut, and I've always believed my gut my entire athletic career. And I just said, you know what? I need to start doing really short, high intensity stuff to make up for the fact that I can't do volume. Boom. It fucking worked.
Oh, yeah. Dude, hey, so, you know, I can't remember the girl's name, but she was a pro triathlete, and this was probably in 2014 or 13. She had a stress fracture in her foot, and she couldn't put in volume, right? But she was a pro triathlete, and she had qualified for Kona. And she, in an article in Triathlete Magazine, she was like, you know, and she was being coached by Matt Dixon, who was a huge proponent of shorter is better and HIIT training, even for Ironman. And she was like, you know, we're in Kona and everybody's going and running the Queen K and doing their runs and rides. And he's got me in the gym doing squats and deadlifts. But what she did that year was she PR'd the marathon and laid down the fastest marathon time at Kona that season.
Wow. Yeah. You know what, man? I'm the last guy at this stage of my career that needs any convincing about the value of HIIT training. Like, I am, and listen, you guys, I am not one of those people that adopts every fucking fad that comes out. As a matter of fact, I abhor that stuff and generally run from it. And so fortunately for me, I can say, and I can prove to anybody who's a doubter, I came across that style of training by accident. I didn't read a book. I didn't read a you guys, I have never read a fucking athletic book in my life. And that is no joke. I've never read a book about how to run. I've never read a book about triathlon. I've never read a book about OCR. I don't do research. I don't read magazines. I don't read articles. This is, again, another piece of that puzzle of the mindset, a little nugget of the mindset being there's some gift that I feel like I have in some way, where intuitively, that's the word. There's the word I was looking for. Intuition. Intuitively, my body knows what to do. And I listened to it. And when it told me to make that change, I made the change. I didn't have to. And it turns out now, what, 2014? So I started doing that type of training in 2013. Turns out, what, 5-6 years later now, I was right. And I had no idea what I was doing. I was literally, and I was so scared, you guys. I remember like almost being in tears with my wife at the time. Like, I have no fucking idea if this is going to work. What am I doing? And you guys, I crushed it.
Nice, man. Well, hey, it actually kind of go along the same lines. We want to jump in the listener questions because we're coming up on time here. And because you and me could talk literally forever. We need to record another episode and you and me just talk for like 3 hours.
But, anytime you guys want, man. I love doing this. I love, you know what, you guys, it's really important to me at this stage of my career to pass on the knowledge and the information I've gathered. Like, I think it's the most important thing I can do now, because all I did in multi-sports was take. And I never gave back, and that always bothered my soul. So this is my opportunity to give back. So I will do any of this kind of stuff anytime, because I want to see people succeed. I want to pass on the information, the knowledge to other people.
Good. Kevin, help my main man here, Super Sanders, aka Andrew Saunders from Instagram, a good buddy of ours. He goes, from what I see him doing on Instagram, appears to be overtraining. Why doesn't he scale it back a bit to produce greater results?
Okay, I'm so glad you guys asked this question, because I have a very easy answer for that question that I think blows the concept of that question out of the water. And here it is, simply. I love the fucking race. And it has always been that way. It'll always be that way. So although I don't believe in the concept of finding balance, I think that's another one of those horseshit concepts. I think that's just a lame excuse that people make. I don't care about finding balance. I want to race. And though I want to produce great results, you guys, I want to race first. So if I prioritize my life and what I want to achieve, I would rather get out there and test myself against people and against courses and against environments and against myself and race more, not much more, but more than having great results. So that's an easy decision for me to choose to train to constantly race so that I can do that. That's one. Two, you guys, I love to fucking train. It's that simple. I like to train, man. Like, I like to hammer the shit out of myself every single day. And so I do. And third, knowing him well, you guys, if you look at the totality of my 28 years of career, I got unbelievably consistent results. I'm consistently up there, consistently producing. Okay. So I kind of take umbrage with the portion of the question that asks, what was the last part like about better results or greater results?
Yeah. Why don't you scale it back to produce greater results?
Yeah, dude, I got great results. When you look at everything that I've accomplished and you look at, it's like, no, I'm not on the podium every race. No, I'm not winning national. Well, actually, I did win a national championship at the USA OCR races. But, you know, I'm not one of the best guys in the world in OCR. And I don't ever claim to be. But here's what I do claim to be. You will constantly see me up there in that top 20 working my ass off. And I will tell you, to end the answer to this question, sorry about the long-winded, but I think it's very important. I will take any day of the week, any time, a consistency of results over the entirety and totality of my career than a flash in the bullshit result of a first, a 40th, a fifth, a 90th, a first, a DNF. To me, one of the hallmark attributes of a truly accomplished endurance sports athlete is consistency. Okay. That's what nice, I value.
Man. Okay. MCOCR asks, if he had to choose between his guns or racing, what would it be and why?
I wouldn't choose. What I would want to do, and I've talked to Robert Kelly about this, I would love to make a similar to biathlon and combine the two. And there's literally no reason why this shouldn't be happening. I should be able to shoot and race and carry a gun and do obstacles at the same time.
Nice. What? So
I don't want to make it. I don't want to make a choice. I want them both. And so I'm not going to make a choice because I don't need to make a choice, but I think we can combine the two. And I want to combine the two.
You know, there's actually one of my OCR clients is a big shooter. Like, he goes and does the shooting competitions. And like he'll spend 7 hours on a Saturday at the range shooting. But he was telling me, and I think it's only in Florida right now, but there is actually a like biathlon, but it's OCR and AR-15s.
Yeah. You know what, you guys, I saw it last year. I got contacted like literally to go to the race a week before, and I already was going somewhere to race. Everything was already in play. Or you guys, I would have been there in a freaking heartbeat to do something like that. Like, that is so up my alley. What you're referencing is three guns. So if you look at three gun competition, it is very similar. Like, you have to do essentially shotgun, rifle, pistol. While running, not obstacles per se like we do, but moving around silhouettes and sorts of obstacles to gain access to whatever it is you're shooting at. So there is no doubt in my mind that there will be an iteration of OCR and biathlon and three gun where we get legitimate obstacle course racing with legit firearms, three gun type shooting.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to see it. I'm pretty excited about this one.
That would be heaven for me. Oh, yeah. Like, that would be the ultimate combination of all worlds for me.
Oh yeah. Well, I kind of like to keep it primitive too. There's one called Train to Hunt where you have to do it, and I think they've scaled it back a little bit now, but you do it, you have a compound bow. So I shoot a bow and like you do OCR type stuff. You have to do box jumps and heavy carries.
I know all about it.
Yeah, dude. I would love to do that.
Yep. So you know, I shoot a Hoyt, you know, I have a 40-yard range in my, I have 4 or 5 3D targets. I shoot a Hoyt Carbon Element, started in 2011. You want to know a funny thing? I actually got in trouble to Spartan Race for taking my bow and shooting on the course at the Spearman.
Seriously? That's awesome.
I got in trouble
when you brought that, right?
Yeah, well, that was a different race. But at Big Bear last year, not this year, Big Bear last year, dude, I put an arrow right through a Samsung S8 phone, $1,000 phone. I've got the video, like I posted it. But so I know all about Train to Hunt. I've actually reached out to them. I want to do the race. The problem is this year's closest Train to Hunt that I was actually going to do was in Arizona. But you guys, it literally came at the end of like 5 weeks in a row of racing, and I just couldn't fathom turning back around and doing another drive out to Arizona to do that. But Train to Race is like high on my list of priorities to do.
Oh yeah, yeah, they had one here in Dallas, and it was the 1st of June, and just it conflicted with something else that I had a commitment for and couldn't do it. I was really bummed. I shoot a one of my good buddies gave me a Matthews Creed. So that's what I'm shooting right now. Yeah. So
Matthews makes a great bow. I know the Creed. It's kind of, if you're a bow guy, I think it really comes down to Matthews and Hoyt.
But oh yeah,
I'm
for
a Hoyt
sure.
Guy.
So before we go down that rabbit hole, let's track it back on here. But it goes right into it. Red Shines the Sun wanted to know, and it's a great question, great segue. When did your love of firearms start?
When I moved to Southern California, Dude, I got fucking stories for days. Like, it's crazy. I moved to Southern California to race. I saw this is no joke. I saw this guy running down the road. I'm literally driving my Acura Integra to this new apartment, and I saw this guy was a monster, huge quads. He just looked like a monster. Years later, I met this guy. I became friends with this guy. I've grown up around firearms. Like, it's been in my family my entire life, but I've hunted, I've shot as a kid with my grandfather. Like, it's always been there, but I didn't have a passion for it. He introduced me to my first gun show. God, I don't even know when this would have been, like in the late 90s, maybe this would have happened. My gun show and first gun show I ever went to in Del Mar. I bought my first pistol, a Glock, 23, 40 caliber. And that's when it started. And so I owe him that debt of gratitude, just like I owe the other guy who I don't even know his name or where he's at now for my sports career. I kind of owe my buddy Gary a gratitude for turning me on to firearms. And that's kind of how it happened.
Very nice. All right. So last question we had from Tony Fithart wanted to know if someone wanted to follow your path of doing Spartan races at a competitive level, what advice would you give them to tweak their training?
Wow, that really is a massive question. So I'll have to I'm going to chunk it here into what I think would probably be the most important stuff. You have to train to race, like I've said, specificity. Do things that you will do in the race. Don't fuck around with corny stuff that you see people do in the gym that's of no value to your racing. Keep it and use specificity. So do movements and do functional fitness and functional training, like combine movements, like running into the tire, flipping the tire, running out, holding some kettlebells. Like, use a functional fitness type training method, okay? Second, you have to work on speed and running. You have to. You have to do speed work, period. You are never going to get to the top, and you are never going to be great at this sport unless you're doing speed work. And speed work is not running fast, people. There is a dramatic difference between going out and running hard and fast with your friends and doing actual concerted effort speed work. So do speed work. OK, okay. Those would probably be the two. I mean, I you know, obviously you can tell. I can talk endlessly. I can give you more. But I think those two, just training to race using functional fitness, and you must do speed work on the run. Yeah. You cannot just show up these races and think that a couple trail runs or a couple long runs or running hard and fast with your buddy is going to get you there, because it will not.
That's what I do. What the heck?
So, Kevin, you've just broken Miles' heart, because he loves to do one thing, and that's bench press, which is totally useless in OCR. And
no, man. Ever since you made me think about that, Mo, I stopped benching.
I know.
And I lost so much of my chest strength. I had to break up the frigging push-ups on the Murph workout.
No. Bench pressing for OCR is so preposterous. It's like an utter waste of time.
Dude, I'm sorry, dude. And nobody told you to stop doing push-ups, man. We told you stop. I told you to stop bench pressing. I think of the
chest strength, you know?
Bullshit.
Strength.
That's exactly why I stopped doing it, Kevin, is because Mo was like, hey, man, you bench a whole lot. And I do, because I just love the way it felt. I love benching. And he's absolutely right. I got to think of it. The movements in OCR, there's not like a whole lot of chest movements other than maybe going over the wall or burpees at a Spartan race. So I stopped doing it. And I haven't done push-ups and all that in a long time. But, man, I'm trying to do the push-ups during the Murph Wad, oh, it was horrible. I was all over the place.
You know what's so funny? Chest strength is just some shit you just made up. There's not even a term called chest strength. Like,
you haven't seen these pecs.
But hey,
we're gonna have a pec contest, you and me, Kevin.
Here's the thing. You've just destroyed Miles' soul, because the two things he loves to do the most are bench press and running trails with his buddy.
True.
Hey, listen, I'm not shitting on either one of those things. Like, if you have a love for bench press, man. But if your goal is to race and train OCR and get to be really good at what you do, I firmly believe it's an absolute waste of time. And running trails is great. I run trails. I run trails all the time. I like to just go run trails. There's nothing wrong with that. But you have to train specifically to race trails. You can't just go run trails and hope suddenly you're going to get – you will get marginally faster, because your turnover is going to get better. You're going to pick better lines. You're going to realize how to negotiate the terrain better. But to get to the level you want to get, that's just running is not going to get you there. Bench pressing is not going to get you there. Those are traditional concepts that come from a traditional world of fitness, but not functional fitness and OCR type preparation.
Nice.
You broke his soul.
Yep.
And I'm sorry, dude. And I like you too, man.
I liked you, but not anymore.
No, now you're dead to me.
No, I love, you know, I'm with you on the benching, dude. I'm not for that. But I have to disagree with you on the trail running, because all of our races are on trails. None of it's on concrete, man. Trail running is the way to go.
Well, you know what, dude? You just fucked up. You just fucked up.
I was about to end the show, but I'm going to let this go now.
He's just going to leave the recording. Mo's going to let it record and walk away.
Let me just say this one thing on this, and I'm going to blow your theory out of the water.
All right, fair enough.
I never said anything about trail racing not being important and that you shouldn't do it. Never. You didn't hear me say it. I've never said such a thing. That's not what I just said. What I just said is, if that's the only thing you're doing, you're not going to get to where you want to go. You absolutely – that would be a contradiction in terms I would never make, because I just got done telling you about specificity. So, of course, you train on trails. We race on trails. But here's something I can assure you. You will not accomplish on the trail solely. You need to do speed work on the road, and you need to do fast work on the road, because you need to have leg turnover, and you will never get the leg turnover that you need to run fast purely by racing trails. It has to come on the road. Your body has to adapt to what it feels like to run a 5.5 minute mile and your legs are having high speed turnover that you will never be able to accomplish on a trail. It's a very different type of racing, and I'm not saying you said this, Miles, but for anybody thinking this, it's a foolish thought to think that road running doesn't transcend over into trail racing, just like trail racing can transcend over into road racing. But I'm going to tell you, brother, most of what you see is me road racing, is road running. So you tell me that, like, do the math yourself. It's there.
Yep.
And the value.
I'm with you about doing specific, like, not just going and running the trails. Like, we will pick a specific segment, and you're looking at heart rate ranges and speed. If you want to do speed work, you can speed work on that. I mean, I agree with you. There's definitely the place for the track and on concrete running. I'm all for that, too. I'm actually 100% here with you, Kevin. I don't think you see it.
Oh, okay.
But the majority of our races, man, they're on trails. And as long as you go out there with a purpose and a specific workout, I think trails are ultimately, like, beneficial more than road for our specific sport, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, yeah, I don't think it's – I think it's not. You it, know, you
– It's not at all.
You will – you know, and it's like I don't – I'm not saying these things to like, I don't say these things to be controversial. Like, I'm not saying these things to be a dick, just to like go against the grain. I have proven my concepts out to myself and to others. And it's like, if you were a new OCR runner, racer, and you wanted to show up and figure out what do I got to do to be a good OCR racer? And all you ever did was start your running career on trails and all you other ran your career on trails. I will fucking smoke you, and I will smoke you because so much speed work is done on the road. Unless you have a genetic talent, of course, there's going to be guys that can just show up and beat the shit out of you. That, I'm talking about statistically the greater group of people. You will have far larger benefits over time from training on the road and getting that speed work and getting that high turnover that will translate and transcend over into trail racing more than the opposite direction. If you go out and train only on trails and then you go try to do a road race, you will get your ass handed to you. If you go do training on the road and do road races and then come over to trail racing, you won't so much get your ass handed to you. No. It's not an equal direction, Miles. I assure you.
Yeah. You and me could go on and on about this. We're already way over time. I can't wait. I'm gonna okay. Call you. We're gonna talk more about this.
Well, yeah,
it's, that's cool. It's always good to hear the other side.
But Miles, you have to understand, like, coming from the background that Kevin has with physiology and running and all that stuff, and the same thing with me. Like, you and I have talked about this. You don't have to be like, can you run trails? Does it help? Yeah, it helps with stability. It helps with balance. But you don't have to run trails to be fast at running trails. I mean, there are a ton of people. I know a lot of triathletes that could go smoke the shit out of damn near all of us in an OCR, just, and they never touch a trail. So it's,
yeah, I mean, well said.
There's a lot of,
I mean, it really is true.
Yeah.
But take those trail people that only live on trails and get them on the road, and dude, it can be a problem.
Yep. Game over. So, all right, guys.
Game over.
With that said, that was a Kevin Gelati mic drop. So, hey man, so we'll look for, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing you this weekend at the Spartan Stadium Sprint here in Dallas. But for those folks that aren't going to get to see you, how can they follow you on social media if they're not already?
You know, more than anything, I would love it if people just went and checked out my website, Kevin Gelati, KevinGellotti.com. And the reason why I want them to see that is because the opening video is all about this accident and the comeback from this accident that almost killed me. And it literally did change my entire life. And hopefully that inspires and motivates some people to get out there and get active. And then, of course, on Instagram, same Kevin Gelati, no hyphen, no nothing, no trick, just Kevin Gelati on Instagram. And that's it. And tune in this week for Facebook Live for Spartan Race. I'll be talking, and it should be fun. I'm excited.
Excellent.
You can't cuss on the Facebook. Remember that, right? We're going to need a disclaimer on this episode.
Yeah, well, you know,
yeah,
what?
I got it. Don't worry about it.
Because I'm literally going to ask Friday, when I show up Friday, we have to have a go-through on stuff. I'm going to ask them, like, if I can or can't. Listen, you guys, that's the internet. That's not TV.
Nice.
Come on now.
Well, listen, I got to roll. I got to get to doing some stuff, but Kevin, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate it. I will definitely put your website
guys,
in the show notes.
I appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to talk shit. I love doing this kind of stuff. I hope people realize there's a lot of fun and lightheartedness here. Like, a lot of people think I'm more serious than I am. If you've hung out with me like Vic has, it's nothing but fucking jokes and funny shit all the time, man. Running around the hotels at Brooklyn's Goal Challenge.
Brooklyn's Goal, yeah.
Yeah, it's all good times, you know.
Perfect. All right, well, we'll definitely have you on for another episode. We'll have some fun with it. But have a great rest of your day, buddy, Miles.
I appreciate it.
For sure, man. Absolutely. Miles, Victor, y'all have great days. And
you too, guys. Thank you so much.
Everybody, stop doing bench press. Do push-ups. Do some speed work. And we'll catch you on another episode of the Link Endurance Podcast.
All right, man. Thanks, guys.
All right. I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. I told you. A lot of big four-letter words. But, man, if you're not motivated to get up and go do some work now, I don't know what to tell you. So anyway, I also wanted to let you guys know that at the end of every episode, you know, I play a song. Now, these songs aren't just fillers. I'm not trying to fill space or time. I play these songs as a hope to motivate you. If you listen to the names or the words in some of the songs that I play, like the last week's song, I believe, was Sia, and the song is called Never Give Up. So I play these songs to give you a little bit of motivation, a little inspiration. And like some of the things, these are songs that I personally like to oftentimes run to or work out to. So if I need a little kick in the butt, I will listen to one of these songs. So it's only fitting that after listening to Kevin's episode, I don't know if he likes EDM or this type of music, but I do. So this is a song to continue the intensity and the fun of the episode that you just listened to. So if you need a little help getting busy, try this song out. All right, guys, have a great rest of your week. We'll catch you next time.
Everybody up and get up on the feet.